interrupting the current neo-Euchronial, climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is BTWRLM 555, if that means anything. Yes, we're still here and still doing it, and thank you very much for all the support and help. And just to let you know up front, we are having still trouble with the Blogcaster. I'm hoping to have that resolved anytime soon. And until then, we have to go to BitChute to get the links. Thank you for your patience as we move this along and trying to get the word out, and in big ways, actually, coming up, hopefully. We really have a whole lot to look at here as we see the news coming at us. As I call it the notice. It seems to me to be fairly obvious that once you, I guess, get your decoder ring and you read enough and you see enough, it starts to make a little bit of sense that why we're not really enjoying the nation as it was organically established and what's been going on with the world. And it's, I don't know, again, looking back in all my broadcasts, not looking at them, but thinking on them, don't know that there's been any misguided guided information. It's going the way you've been told behind the woodshed. Don't know what more to say. It's disappointing in one regard, and maybe that's where we have to go as people, to step up and try to resolve. I can just say it's a maladministration of government, because that's the best way to go through it, because that's written down in the black and white, and the government agents really can't do much about that. That's your right to alter or abolish as the people see fit, and that's one of the hang-ups I found out, that they can divide the people and keep them from moving forward on what needs to be done. It can be a long row to hoe, as they might say, on this plantation that we find ourselves in. And I want to touch something that didn't get to last week, as just the news, the notice about what's available to us, even in a time that appears we live in a open-air prison, and moving quickly to the digital gulag, the panopticon of the technocrat. Really, nobody knows what to do to stop it. I'm not quite sure why, other than there is ways, but it takes a little bit more work. And the longer and deeper they go into this, the harder it is to pull it back. And a lot of people don't care, I think. A lot of people care, but don't really work toward it. And we think at some point talking on X or whatever on a meta is going to solve problems, but it's just not. There are a few people I see that are running initiatives like the 10th Amendment initiatives type thing through their states. That's a way to go. That's where you should be going for your local rights. But that's also another problem. It's been usurped as well. And it was done in a lot of different ways than just, you hear it behind the woodshed. I talk about this stuff routinely and regularly, but there's a lot of usurpations going on. And somehow, somewhere, the law, order, principle has been broken. And I don't know where that came from. I don't know why people allowed that to happen. And because of all these allowances and breakages, it makes the rats play, as the cats are away. Another thing I'd like to talk about, I don't touch too much. It's a very difficult subject in a way. Everybody has their ideas about it. I always say do what you can do without jeopardy. Some of these folks that do this are right on the front lines of that, and they get questioned, and they get attacked, and they get hurt, and that's a little bit more than I would want to do. Not that you don't do something, but you find the path of least jeopardy. And that's one of the things about the right to alter or abolish, or the so-called democratic government that we have, the republic within which it's supposed to contain that process, is demo, is the people. And they have the right to oversee their government. They have the right to see what's going on and identify it, record it. They have the right to do all that. And that's been a thing that's been under attack here, as the occupiers in the blue don't believe that. As we find ourselves in the open-air prison, they are the wardens, they are the law enforcers. You're a trustee of a very particular character and haven't figured that out. And there's an idea that maybe these folks work for us, and, well, they're working on us maybe more right now. This has kind of gone down a long, long old path, dark path for a long time, but occasionally people step up, stand up to their rights, and they persevere, and we get the return eventually. Another form of right to record, which would not suffer the terrorist defamation or a negative sanction that was imposed upon us by 9/11 as a presumption now, is our right to be informed. And people are taking that seriously and enforcing those rights, and they read the law, and you find out real quickly the lawyers and or agencies or the employees or the officers maybe not so keen on it. They're told they are, but they really may not be. But in particular for some of this, we have read this first story federal court now in New York. There's a right to record police officers, and state law says that that includes inside station lobbies. And this is a very interesting story you have to take, pay very close attention to. And this is where you're going to find out there may be a power in separation in the states being separate, but this is where the that is not an advantage, where each state now will be going, you'll have to go to each state in order to get your rights, which is proper underneath the organic and republic's form, but that becomes an advantage for the system to take advantage, because it's what happens over there doesn't necessarily affect this state over here, even though the principle may be the same, and even though this may be a federal court, which in this case is why you have to read very carefully, took cognizance of that and mentions it relative to states. Sean Paul Reyes, an independent journalist who always records his interactions with the NYPD officers, sued the New York Police Department after officers told him he was not allowed to record them while standing in a precinct lobby. Again, pay very close attention to the details and facts of this case. Do I say this now? I guess I will. Maybe I'll say it again. Do not just take this case and run with it in your state. It may apply. You're going to apply it through your state statutes. And this federal court is very particular about saying that in a number of places. And it may not be an absolute right. And this is where it's interesting. The attorneys will be hot on this to adjust what they, I think that they thought that they were doing. And they're going to bring more. This is not an open right. This is going to be a conditioned right, notwithstanding our right to be informed. And you have to listen and watch very carefully how the system heals up the wounds to keep you from doing stuff. Again, educate yourself so that you don't bring jeopardy upon yourself on doing something you thought was right, but find out it's not. And the other side, the occupier, it works these holes in order to trap you. You step in them, you think you're right, and you're not. And I see lots of people who will assert that they've been wronged and they didn't understand the real dynamic behind it. What I try to talk about all the time and expose, again, we are in a very particular set of handcuffs, and people don't appreciate it, I don't think. And I'd really hate, my whole thing coming through this was watching people getting harmed who thought they understood things and they didn't. And a lot of people believed in them. Like, I still believe in a lot of people, but they went down the wrong path, and that's where I had to hold short. In fact, a couple, through my decades, I've informed what they ought to do, and they just look the other way. And so that's a bit of a tragedy, but I don't know what more to do than to explain the path that someone may be on, if I understand it, and explain what may be down that path, and maybe there's a place that you need to either not go down that path or make the proper selection if you have choices. In this case, despite a pretty much affirmed right to record officers under the First Amendment, policy directives reminding officers of this fact, and much more importantly, a state law codifying this right, the NYPD still pretends it can control when and where it can be recorded. And this is not just the NYPD. This is what all the government occupier officers do, not just the police officers. All the government agencies pull this. They challenge you right to the end and into a lawsuit to make you prove it. They're not recognizing these rights up front. This was another lesson I learned relative to mining and disposal of land and the trust obligation of the government to those people that accept the congressional grants, which should have priority. And in the enabling acts of the states are to be given a hands-off and priority. Not to everything. You don't make a crime because you're of a status, but what is it within the context of that disposal? I found out, nope, they're challenging everybody. Doesn't matter what the law said. And this is what you start finding the evidence. You know them when you see them. That's all I can tell you. That's why the Lieber Code is so powerful. The very first opening salvo against us is told to us. We don't need to tell you that we're an occupying force. You'll know us by what we do to you. And so it's not a nuance. But Reyes, this gentleman here, is a First Amendment auditor, the term used by people who use confrontational tactics to see if cops are willing to recognize their right to record. So Reyes was doing his normal auditor thing in the lobby of the 61st Precinct. While doing so, he was approached by Sergeant Torceres Corchimet, who informed Reyes he was not allowed to record in the lobby. And by inform, I mean Sergeant Corchimet pointed to a sign that stated, quote, members of the public are prohibited from audio, video recording, or photography inside this facility, close quote. Then he arrested Reyes when he refused to stop recording. This chain of events played out again 2 months later resulting in a second arrest. Now the court speaking through the court case that was laid against the new NYPD, the court first finds the recording police performing their official duties in public is protected under the First Amendment. Although the Second Circuit has not weighed in on whether recording the police is protected First Amendment activity, other circuits have uniformly recognized a First Amendment right to record the police performing their duties in public. Listen carefully, be careful here on this one. When reading the reasoning, the right is connected to a state without which federal courts have not been so willing to extend, in fact, flipping the burden upon the right seeker to show none of these restrictions this court says could exist do not exist. It's on you asserting the right. The burden is on you to show these rights, but these things do not exist. Like, almost like, sounds like proving a negative, but the way they got it worked out, it's not, and it's very difficult. You have to perfect your claim. Again, this is my danger about talking about this stuff on a broadcast. People think, oh, they heard the answer, the silver bullet, let's go do it. No, slow down. Go read more. If that's going to be your incentive, use it as an incentive, but don't use it as what you lead with. Do not lead with your chin or your wrists, in this case, for the arrest. So this warning can be, you read later in the report, first finds the police performing their official duties in public protected under the First Amendment, although second court. These are not consistent decisions, and that's where the problem is. They refer to the public problem and where that police is public. And so do not take this right to record in New York State as a right in any other state whose language for the right is not identical in force and effect to the law that is recognized in this New York federal court in that state. The concerns about privacy of other people in precinct lobbies, as well as more nebulous concerns about officer safety, could be enough to persuade a jury that the NYPD can legally forbid recordings in this area. But there's something far more local and specific that says the NYPD can't do this. It's the state law that the court finds. So this is not a federal law under the federal constitution. Somebody made a law in this state that allowed it. This is where I said you have to start. If you want to write, you're going to have to get legislators, your supposed representatives, to make these kinds of laws. And don't stray too far from a good one. And maybe if you see some weakness in them, improve those spots in your state. This is what I've been saying. I know I don't like it, and I don't like that we have to do this, but it's not something that they presume. When you come from the attitude or the idea that you live in an open-air prison, what I'm saying becomes a lot more sensible to why we have to do this. It's essentially how the warden's going to act and how their agents are going, their officers are going to act in the prison. You now have to have those written. But you just saw the burden. This court finds that the burden is on the plaintiff, as it normally is, but it's that the right exists, that the other side doesn't have the rights they may claim. In this case, privacy to the officials for whatever they may claim. And if you read it again, get the article and read for all the potential exceptions here available to protect the government. It's critical to read this. One of the reasons why I didn't want to race too much through this one, but I have to move through it anyway pretty quickly. This is a very instructive article that anybody who's doing this auditing needs to get, and put your state particularly into this and track down exactly what this court's telling everybody. It is not a cut and dried First Amendment right. If there is, the government has its own necessity, for however tenuous that might be, they can still assert that and beat you, and they talk to a jury. So now you're up against a bunch of people that may be ignorant, and now your character as a plaintiff comes online, and they may not like you. They may not like what they hear. They may want to protect the cops in these situations. You could lose. So this is not, again, do you have a right? Do you have a right? No. Do you have something you can go fight for? And if you do it correctly, why I'm so adamant about people setting up the record, knowing what you're doing and setting up the record in the right ways, not just telling everybody how much you know. It has nothing to do with any of that, actually. So the exceptions available to protect the government without an enacted state law, a plaintiff suing the police or other government instrumentality may have the burden to address all those concerns of the federal court protecting the governmental interests in this. And there are numbers. It's astonishing, actually, when I was reading how many they're extending to the government, that the government lawyers claim. That's who you're really up against. This decision also explains, as I have, if my listener wants to recognize, you'll have to get that legislature to enact the protection of it objectively. In other words, so it's black and white, And they may still want to violate, the officials may violate, but at least you have the objective basis where the legislature says that these things are not within the government's right to demand. And then you have to stay within those as they're written. Otherwise, they'll make this up. And so that will objectively encumber the officials with that duty. It's not for protection directly, but the right to sue for its violation by the occupying force, bent on being an occupier, not honoring their duties under law in the first instance. And this is how you start to look at this a little better. I think I keep repeating this. If you come from the place that you have rights that are paramount, unalienable, as they'll say, you're going to not understand what's happened and why people get beat up, killed, shot, and whatever. You're not going to understand that. And you'll be so focused on the right you've been denied and not realize and never get that right, actually, and just grumble about it and complain and never work to really regain it. It's there, but it was taken. It was taken under a number of nefarious ways. And the very judiciary we're looking at here, the members of that are these people that allowed all this over time. And those of you that read case law, you should be able to pull that out. In fact, you got to be very careful reading that case law. You have to properly interpret what they're actually saying. And if you come from, well, I have rights, you're not necessarily going to read in those decisions the correct approach either. Partly why I don't like case law, notwithstanding it doesn't pertain to any case I would ever brought. I was never in it. The decision was never made. It's not applicable over in an overview, but it's really could be contorted. The statements can be used. They're just opinions. They're not necessarily facts and law applied. And so you got to be really, really careful. I appreciate the auditors, and I appreciate what they might do. I'm very leery about whether or not they think they know more than they actually do relative to how it's going to be implemented. Now we see in each particular state. So like any cop shop here, it's manned by cops who believe deliberate ignorance of the law is the best excuse. That's just attorneys. The same association that's running the judicial branch of every state. Their members are deny. Create statements of that are not concise enough that you can hide in plausibly as a defendant who's just violated people's rights. This is what's going on all the time. And then you read also in the story this condition, a state law codifying this right, but the NYPD still pretends it can control when and where it can be recorded. That is simply, in my experience over decades, what the government does. It will deny, just denies everything. And here, who pays for it when they're wrong anymore? It's the taxpayer, so-called. And so there is really a miswiring. They've figured out how to use the system against us, the people, and all it's about is money. It's also about every crime is just a commerce crime. And so this follows suit through those of you that think this is a corporation and there's all commerce, and that's where we're going through. So what's your right to audit there? Well, unless you're a bookkeeper, I don't know you have much right, that the one that you're auditing doesn't have a whole lot to say about what you don't get to look at. And then you have to prove that you do get to look at it, or they don't have the right to rely on it. So if you don't have this in your head while you're watching doing this stuff, you may run yourself into a problem. If it's not identical to this case, be very, very, very careful. And we also have this condition where, as the article points out, so there are good reasons for limiting or forbidding recordings in this space. They would assert that. You'd have to know that ahead of time in a way, what that reason might be. You may have to answer to that as a complainant and overcome the burden of saying that it was not worthy. And that this article from TechDirt, when you read it, you start to see about how you would approach that. We can read here, the B plaintiff has demonstrated a likelihood of success on the merits, on the right to record claims as a state law protects him within that, as the federal court finds. Again, the federal court's not running their own law here. The federal court is not a law of common law. Everyone wants to believe it is. There is no federal common law. I think Erie versus Tompkins case, and I think it's 1938, tells you that. There is no real common law. It's in the states. And that common law has been contorted as well. But here, the state law is what the federal court is reviewing, and the federal court has to follow the state law where there's no prohibition against the federal jurisdiction. Reyes secures his injunction forbidding the NYPD from arresting people for recording in a police station lobbies. On top of that, the NYPD is ordered to remove its signs declaring such recordings forbidden. The NYPD cannot legally forbid these recordings, not under state law. If the NYPD doesn't like this, it can do what so many courts have suggested plaintiffs suffering clear rights violations do, take it up with the legislators. What it definitely can't do is continue to enforce policies that conflict with state law. And the article, if we go through, summates this whole thing. The state may have had a case if it had passed a law that created more protection than that acknowledged by the federal courts under the First Amendment. It could have made the case it had legitimate reasons for restricting recordings inside precincts and buildings. The judge is now explaining to the state what it's going to have to do if it wants to make these places off limits. Oh, you don't have the right no more. So it's not really a right. It's something you get to fight for against an occupier. Well, the judges are telling them, you failed right here. If you want to close this hole, you're going to have to articulate that in black and white. It goes on to say, restricting recordings inside precinct buildings, even if publicly accessible areas, can be done if the legislature said so. But these two arrests were unlawful under state law. State law. No federal constitution here. Understand this, please. Understand what you're actually working in. But these two arrests were unlawful under state law, and unprecedentedly, decisions from around the nation have held that even restrictions like these might fall on the wrong side of the Constitution. So my listener should not disregard these warnings. We're in warnings, and in particular in other states, but not in New York, and despite Reyes being awarded the relief requested, an injunction. That's an action in equity, what I talk about as well. This is not something he's actually going after for damages, which is a common law case at law, and it's a different jurisprudence. So, very important case, very important read. For those of you want to understand it better, look at what the court said. And I'm warning people, warning, we're in a war against us and our rights by the usurpation, the occupiers, and you have to toe the line. Why we don't have rights, why people don't think we have right government, because you don't quite understand, I believe, I should say, that people do not understand the reality about what this place is, notwithstanding the rights they claim that we have. It was overthrown. It was overthrown in Lincoln's time, and it has been overthrown subsequently in protection of that. I've read a lot of the documents to explain that. It's partly why I go through and talk about international law. There's the principles that are in it. That's what the Lieber Code went through into in the 1800s, remember. Hague Convention Conference. Remember, it's all international stuff. But you look locally. Even your statutes are written that way. Where the statute says a definition, you use that. You don't use a dictionary. You don't use black law. You use the definition in the statute. It's the localness of it. If a policy has a definition, you have to use that first. Only after you show, again, your burden to show it could not be that way, and it was not properly that way, can you then move to your next higher right in the hierarchy of the occupier, which is layered and layered down until it's almost eye-bleedingly hard to understand it all. So this next story is the best reason why the U.S. needs to stop making up reasons to go to war. No warnings here. It's a constitutional and trust breach. This next story will tell us, I believe, if we read through it and just apply what is the organic law that they're not giving you so you can apply it directly, especially in equity. You don't have to wait to have your rights determined if they were there and you have the right facts to state that you do have the right to it. Why equity is so powerful and could be so quick. It's been usurped too, so nothing's a silver bullet, but you at least have a lot less to talk about if you are understanding that. It's a constitutional trust breach, this next story, in the minimum of allowing the government to go about making war, where it looks like it would be also treason if you look from the governments to protect your rights, and now they're interfering. As we read, industry leader warns of global gunpowder shortage. Geopolitical conflicts have sparked unprecedented demand. A scarcity of global gunpowder supplies could trigger a substantial increase in ammunition prices, U.S. company Vista Outdoor has warned, according to Newsweek report. The Minnesota-based firm, which owns several firearms businesses, told the magazine last week, due to the world events, our suppliers have notified us of unprecedented demand for an anticipated global shortage of gunpowder and thus has increased our prices substantially. This is interesting. This is also going on not just for gunpowder, but for supplies in Russia. And they're having to now increase interest rates because the demand, this is actually now it's supply and demand. They're actually now coming off the back of the demand because of a supply shortage in the world. One other reason why the globalization was chopped up and made it harder, supply chains were made harder to connect back in. Vista's Outdoors Vice President of Sporting Product Sales, Brent Nelson, was quoted as saying in a letter, "We must therefore raise our pricing to help offset these increases." So this is immediately interfering with our Second Amendment right, the constitutional reservation, the power to alter or abolish the government as the people see fit when the usurpers decide to take arms against the people, even as the populace doesn't recognize the occupation as it has taken up arms against them, though its various law enforcement organs, local, state, and federal, as Lincoln, a lawyer, remember, the same association, long-standing, from England, long ago imposed, and the Bar Association provides cover. Well, all these years, I've read the official documents here, again, on all of this stuff, that the government needs to, when they've done this, the government goes to war, and they're now causing an ammunition shortage. It seems to me they need to compensate for an unlawful takings of the right. Remember, the right is a coercion to do that. It's a felonious act as well. And those of unable to afford the ammunition or arms to execute the constitutionally reserved power because of the causative policies and frauds or other maladministration of the government, so they are not infringed as to their enumerated reserve powers, have an unlawful takings claim as well, it seemed to me, under this story, which this company is instrumental here itself, uninfringing by its own words. I think if you read, you'll see that. The report also highlighted that Vista Outdoor had pledged a million round ammunition donation to Ukraine for March 2024, quote, supporting the relief effort is a crucial element of the global response, and we are proud to do our part, close quote. The company said, quote, it underscores how critical the Second Amendment is in America and highlights the importance of the ability of American manufacturers to supply our allies with ammunition. Interjection, what about the people? What are you taking away from the people? Is that what they're talking about? Underscoring the importance to the people? Was if you take it away? Yeah, I think it might be construed that way. He doesn't mean it that way, but I'm looking at it. I have a different view on a lot of this, I think. And I'm trying to see, well, when are we going to uphold our right? And when are we going to defend ourselves against raising prices and giving ammunition to somebody else that causes a shortage that requires that you have to pay more money? It's just another commercial plunder. We have long supported Ukrainian armed forces, and we will continue to do so in this global cause to unite for democracy, it added. Well, that democracy is an international democracy. It's not the republic, is it? And Ukraine, we're finding out, was a lost cause. It was also a commercial endeavor that the United States caused war and lost. And I think the news is kind of holding out. I think we're starting to see that, even though the government has to back off. They're not wanting to spend too much more, although they did, again, keep the dragging their feet. But sounds like another boycott in this case like any other cancel culture operation. Right, Bud Light, as we look at this, look at folks, they're selling to Ukraine. They're giving to Ukraine the powder you need, and because it's not available, they're going to charge you more. Seems like you need to boycott that company. And they have a whole bunch of companies, apparently. What did the United States government do in the show of utter contempt for reserve powers of the rights of Americans and likely on purpose being at war with the people? Well, they went ahead and the U.S. Senate passes $886 billion defense bill sent to the House for consideration. Now, this is old news, but I want to show you how the government works. They are knowing that there's a gun. They are a part and parcel cause of a gunpowder shortage, which is eliminating the gunpowder that the people need to protect itself against this government in its constitutional duty to do so. And the representatives, so-called, don't care. They're going to go ahead and do more defense bills and make more war, use up more ammunition, even if it just sits around to do nothing. You won't have it. The bill also includes an extension of Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, Section 702, authorities without reforms to the surveillance power. The real news I was wanting you to engage, I hope some of you did, trying to explain to these fools that this was not, didn't need to go, they could have left it alone. I figured it would pass, but here it is. Apparently our noise is not enough to scare them, and I think it needs to be more organized so that it does. Senator Majority Leader Chuck Schumer urged the House of Representatives to swiftly pass the legislation as well. However, the House Freedom Caucus said that it opposes the bill due to the clean FISA extension. This posed a little bit of a potential obstruction, short-lived, I'll tell you, as we get to the next tab here. But earlier this week, the Biden administration said it supports a swift passage of defense bill by Congress, taking more, apparently, gunpowder away. And so we want to know what's in this thing. Where is it going to go? And is it going to be stopped by the House? The House did its part, did not delay the continual depletion of the Treasury or your gunpowder supplies. And we're told by Representative Clay Higgins of an X post that you'll get. X has now kicked out two of my browsers. I can't even get into those normal browsers, but I hope you can or not. I don't know. They're really limiting our browser access anymore to the ones they want us to use. But to hear Clay Higgins on X posted a post, which someone at Mission Freedom Initiative responded to. I'll get to his in a moment. 2024 NDAA, $886 billion, 100% deficit spending, $800 million to Ukraine, woke policy that's destroying our military, DOD abortion tourism and trans surgery, an insulting 5% raise, 15% inflation for our frontline warfighters, and we still have zero border security, was his comment. The $800 million to Ukraine, I'm hearing lots of people say that. I found lots of stories they are, but I'm also seeing maybe it was only $300 in an ongoing securities aid package that is, but it doesn't matter. $300 million is a lot of money to a crime that's going on in Ukraine, international war crime instigated by the United States. But Clay Higgins explains that it's been passing. Unfortunately, says Missouri Freedom Initiative, unfortunately, the NDAA renewal passed in the House. Boy, they did this lickety-split. And this, again, I don't see how this is not the uniparty or that they how they represent the people of the United States. And this was previously passed by the Senate, he says, and is now on the way to Comrade Biden for his signature. Folks, he said, this should serve as a reminder that we need to work with our state governments to end the federal surveillance state madness. And so this Missouri Freedom Initiative, he's the 10th Amendment type guy or group, and I couldn't find quickly too much information, but he's in my feed, and I think he's right a lot of the time as far as getting active in the state, although you're going to, not to dismiss this, but you're going to find your own, the uniparty is across this nation in all levels, and it's not just them, it's the Bar Association members, okay? So there's a much bigger play going on, and then it's been infiltrated, this whole thing's been infiltrated by the sustainability crowd, which this uniparty also agrees with. For the most part, anyway, I should say. He goes on to write here, there was no money in the National Defense Authorization Act that just passed the House for border security in the United States. There was an $800 million for Ukraine border security, though. And so that's the big rub, and that's what was almost looked like an obstacle going into the House. But, man, this thing went right through. I couldn't even get to the news. I had to cut out some tabs like I was going to get there by Monday. No, this thing went like in 24 hours. It was done. As we read, a House passes annual defense bill with the key Israel provisions. I wanted, okay, what about Ukraine? Let's go look at Israel. There was a big fight. That all went. It went up in the gunpowder smoke, apparently, because they passed this thing so quickly, went on through, notwithstanding some bills that went through. And a thank you, I guess, to Rand Paul for trying to put some controls on the 702 section. Don't know what the reason why it's continued, but they did re-up it, so we have to live with that for more, and they'll talk about it right here. Both conservative and progressive opponents of the bill cited an extension of Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which permits warrantless wiretapping of foreign communications, including contact with U.S. citizens. You're presumed that status, whatever your thought is about it. You can make fairy tales up about not being that status. I'm not a U.S. citizen, but they presume you that status, and they're the ones with the power. So kind of rethink where you think you're going with that. When we deny, 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 we're doing worse than what the attorneys do. The attorneys do that to defend you. You're doing it to walk yourself into a problem. Totally wrong thought here. Anyway, they presume us U.S. citizens all. If we're using those services that they are looking at, you are considered that status. This is the telecommunications system for the most part here. Under the bill, though, Israel. How short and fast this was, but Israel is to receive $500 million for missile defense cooperation $47.5 million in new spending for U.S.-Israel cooperation on emerging defense technologies and $55 million for the U.S.-Israel counter-drone program, as well as training and aerial refueling for Israeli Air Force. Now, that is in the appropriations bill now. Refueling training is the notice to Iran, and explained later, right later, a few paragraphs in the story where it says, countering Iranian threats and those posed by its regional proxies is also a part of the bill, which would require the U.S. Defense Secretary to fully integrate Israel into the U.S. maritime security strategy to counter Iranian maritime threats. So the United States is all about war, going to war, preparing for the war, paying for the agents of war. And then you look at both Ukraine and Israel, as I've talked extensively. Ukraine was supposed to be a rump state that was not fully sovereign, that was supposed to be a buffer to Russia, but the West ran a coup, overthrew, and then started killing those people. And Israel does not actually have the power they have. They're an belligerent occupier, as I read those documents under the extension of the law of war, and shown that they have no right of self-defense. They have no right to do what they're doing. The agreements were to allow the Palestinians to make this self-determination relative to all this, not be imposed. And the United States is helping two sides that had no actual rights and power in the extent that they're used as tools by the United States. And we can read again here that Iranian threat they talk about. That's like prime in what that's all about for the refueling. They've been talking about that also before. This is not the first time. They're just going to continue it. They're training their jet. Their F-16s can't get to Iran and back without the refueling. And their Air Force only has, or their plane system, they only have some old units, and they needed to get more. So this is, Iran is still on the tap. They've been the focus. We've heard about it, and so I don't know what more to say. This is a warmongering state now, as we also see the remnant, if it's a remnant, the influence of the Zionista sort in our country, the United States of America, doing the very same thing. It's all coming through. And the Uniparty is just a prostitute to that influence at all, it seems to me. Here, and the NDA is not the only appropriation. Apparently, the executive branch, we're talking about losing the Republican form of representative government, they've read in all kinds of exceptions now. I don't know how their constitution at all, but they have the executive branch can now do appropriations despite the constitution. I thought Congress was at least indicated, if it's not a law, it indicated Congress had the exclusive power over the purse. But no, the Biden administration can move more funds and appropriations to Israel. Again, a criminal, a war criminal, a violator of international law, international norms, war provisions, agreements. There's no they're beholden to nothing, it seems. And we're aiding it as a nation. We're aiding and abetting. Well, your representatives are in these appropriations and in the Biden administration itself. The U.S. approves emergency sale of emergency now. Okay, well, we got to even ramping it up even more. When you look at what's going on there, it doesn't look like much of an emergency to me. Anyway, it just sounds like they walked into it, and now they're showing us how stupid the Zionists are, actually. This was I don't think they've gotten anything right on this, and I think the Hamas is very close to getting everything that they demanded, whether or not they get taken out, which looks like it's a regional thing, as we talked. Hamas is going to try and live, and the regional players are not stepping in. I find this really fascinating, just watching this game go on. But anyway, the U.S. approves emergency sales of arms. The Biden administration has bypassed Congress to provide tank ammunition for West Jerusalem's war against Hamas. They're actually talking beyond Gaza and into the West Bank now. So this is going to be kind of interesting. And Israel just declared a war of sorts on Lebanon. In Lebanon, there's people that are saying, we're in a war. You don't have to declare it. We've been in the war. But everyone's holding back for some reason. They got their strategy. They're all holding back and letting Israel cause their own problems. But President Joe Biden's administration doesn't see any of it. They circumvented congressional authority. Well, there it is. I thought the Congress had the power of the purse. How are they getting it? I don't know. It's not been fully explained to me in the writings or anywhere I've read, but they're going to circumvent congressional authority over military aid to Israel by granting emergency approval for selling $106.5 million worth of tank ammunition. There's more of your gunpowder going up in smoke here, folks. You can't protect yourself in the States, and the ones that's available is going to cost you more money, just like austerity and the new economy is going to be for everything. We're seeing it run right up. The tank ammunition is needed for the West Jerusalem's escalating war effort against Hamas and the Gaza Strip. We mean West Jerusalem. And this is, you see, the imposition of the future upon the people of Palestine, the Palestinians, who were supposed to be self-determinant over a territory called Palestine, not separate. I have found no documentation underneath the global nation's purview that allows for anything that we're seeing, and the United States is footing the bill for about all of it. Again, isn't it ironic, if it's irony that at all, that Ukraine would die on the vine in weeks, if not days, if it wasn't for the United States, and Israel, it would do the same, maybe a little bit longer now they got some. Both countries, so-called, both of these places require the United States input of the gunpowder that they're raising the price on to go up in smoke, and without which these wouldn't even be notices in news in the news cycle. Fascinating. The U.S. State Department confirmed its decision on Saturday, saying it had notified Congress the previous day after the Secretary of State Antony Blinken, the red lights, he sees red lights everywhere, and concludes that an emergency exists that requires an immediate sale of tank shells to Israel. The emergency determination was made in the context of protecting U.S. national security interests, the department says. So there you have it in a line. And national security steps up to eliminate all law, apparently, in this country. That's not the way I thought it was, and I didn't think they could just say it's an emergency and be enough, but you saw the very same thing go on in Kobe Swindle, and the whole world agreed to the lack of reason, the lack of basis. Think about that. Think about what we're actually looking at, witnesses to, in the whole of the world. Fascinating. It's terrifying, but fascinating. Approvals of such armed sales rarely bypass Congress oversight and congressional oversight and are ostensibly granted only when the executive branch sees the need to deliver weapons too urgent to wait for lawmakers to take action. And I read that and said, well, so what if the intention of Congress was not to take any action? What if it was the intention of Congress to not provide the funds? This anticipates that they would. Well, I guess we're back to the Uniparty, aren't we, then? There's no debate in this country as well. Watch your nation collapsing right in front of your eyes. Watch the destruction. It's going down just as quick as an Israel bomb, targeting a bomb that they claim Hamas is in the basement. Watch how fast this nation starts to descend. The United States is committed to the security of Israel and is vital to the U.S. national interest to assist Israel to develop and maintain a strong and ready self-defense capability. So does this power, quandary here, does this power of the purse circumventing Congress include fraud? Is what I'm wondering. This is the whole point about questioning and debating the reason. The Zionist Federation, being a belligerent occupier, has no right of self-defense under the law of war and no right to commit war crimes, nor a right to breach international agreements. It is a party to, however, a lawful international recognition of the state of illegal occupier is. Remember, I'm not so much on board that any nation agreed that the state of Israel could exist. They don't have a right title interest or privity to that land. They didn't have right title interest to a state. They didn't have a government. They had a political movement. So I'm not even on board even with the recognition. And no, looked around, there's no explanation. It's just being done. It's just being foisted on the world. And so the second fraud is, since when is the violating the law of war and committing war crimes, torture, and oppression, to name a few, breaching international agreements on the rights of a territory of third parties in the national interest, folks? And that just maybe gets me back. If they'll do it, the United States will do it over there. They're doing it to you home. It may not look like it, but they're doing it to you at home, and they're willing to do it to you at home. And When I just say that, my mind just goes to all the examples I can look at. When I don't have my rose-colored glasses on about what I think this government's about, it just starts to line everything right back up. And then that's where I say we have a much different question to be asking and a much different tack to be taken and a much different contemplation to happen, and it's going to take a unified people. I don't know who's going to unify. I'm told, like everyone else is told, who that's going to be, but that's not the one we want to hear, and that's going to be an international voice as well. So people better step up and understand that this is not really the game that's going on, what we need to fix. This is it's like the symptoms of what we need to fix. So we now again have in the news, while we're supporting, the United States government is paying money to go support these war criminals, these belligerent occupiers having no right of self-defense under the right of self-defense, a defense interest, national security interest, we see this evidence that there's either incompetence admitted here or a psychopathy, which the United States is likely actually supporting. And then you go look at who's running the place, and boy, wow, I don't know how you'd say they're not. But Israel now admits to immense amount of friendly fire on October 7th. Just what the reports were starting to say, and we can read here, again, incompetence or psychopathy. These are some evil, evil people. But here the point being, leading in from, there's been money and material appropriated to these people that would look like, they call it the euphemism, friendly fire. No, they murdered their own people for a reason. The Zionists murdered the Jews, if I can put it in that context, on purpose in order to make a point. For those who are paying attention to the actual evidence, or lack thereof, Hamas mass atrocities on October 7th will have already known that the Israeli police investigation has already shown how Israeli Apache helicopters opened fire on the attendees of the Nova Music Festival that day. If widely disseminated, it would have been a game changer and would trigger a reversal on blind, unfettered U.S. and U.K. support for Israel's unprecedented massacre of Palestinian civilians in Gaza. So it's hardly surprising that the mainstream media has completely blacked out these explosive revelations as your gunpowder goes up in smoke. Fresh testimony reveals how Israel killed captives in the kibbutz of Be'eri on October 7th. Hadas Dagan was the sole survivor from a house where 14 hostages were killed. She has withheld her testimony until now. We have a link to the X post. You can read it yourself from Uncaptured News. The statement, initial Nova Music Festival revelations were mentioned in a Haaretz report. On November the 18th, where an Israeli police source confirmed how an Israeli combat helicopter that arrived on the scene from the Hamat David base and proceeded to fire on the music festival attendees estimated that some 364 people were mowed down there. And there's more details coming out every day. So this sounds as if this is part of that Hannibal directive, which was implemented here, folks. And the Zionistas, again, if you can differentiate the two, Jewish people versus the political movement that wants to stay alive. No different than Hamas in a way. Although Hamas has more legitimacy because they were elected. For whatever people don't like about it, they were still move themselves into power. But that's the general government power where they are protected under international law. Not all Hamas people are a combatant. They could be actually, in a moment, they could be doing civilian type work, government work. And Israel is supposed to recognize that. But Zionista Israeli helicopters began to fire hellfire missiles and machine guns, indiscriminately killing Hamas militants and Israeli civilians. And here we're appropriating money to this regime. I bring you up to I give you the Twitter link here. You can read. Let's get over to that. We question whether or not it's the Hannibal directive implemented. This was an interesting, they claim that it doesn't exist now, but it's just a directive. They call it the Hannibal Protocol or the Hannibal Procedure. I'm now into Wikipedia just to reference this. Is the name of the controversial procedure that was used by Israeli Defense Forces until 2016 to prevent the capture of Israeli soldiers by enemy forces. According to one version, it says that the kidnapping must be stopped by all means, even at the price of striking and harming our own forces. And what we see is a psychopath in Netanyahu who wants to commit genocide. They are committing genocide on a people who actually belong on that land. And this now brings up the idea, is this now that Hannibal directive being implemented? They're killing their own people. They want, it's all backfiring, more gun smoke going up, I guess, all backfiring on them, but they're still persisting. Now they even double down. It's pretty, like I said, psychopaths, folks. This has to go beyond incompetence. Really, really has to go. But I'll offer, maybe there's an innocent angle. I don't know. I haven't heard it. The U.S. now is a veto. So how the psychopathy moves right into the administration of the government. U.S. vetoes a Gaza ceasefire's resolution is hypocrisy, says China. And they had a Security Council meeting to do so, to pass a ceasefire amendment for the U.N. Washington condones the fighting while claiming to care about Palestinians, Beijing's envoy has said. Now, you can get into, oh, this is the Chi-Coms and whatever, or Russians or whatever. But listen to the principle. Listen to the logic. And I hope you come up with the same, I don't care if you don't like people from China. He's made a comment, and I can't disagree with this comment. And this is, a principle. The reason why there's this, I know, the euphemism, law of war, is so that people don't suffer more than they need to, in lots of areas, even the soldiers and all that. So we try to be a bit respectable in our worst affairs. And so that kind of, I guess, brings us up into a different level, I suppose. That's just where we want to meet that at some point. All nations are said to want to meet that. That's why those things exist. And that's even the cover why the UN, the League of Nations, and then the UN got created, to be able to make these more prevalent in the world. Well, you're watching the United States and you're watching Israel just completely destroy all this. But here, commenting on the vote of this ceasefire agreement in the UN, Zhang expressed a great disappointment and a regret. The U.S. stonewalled the resolution, arguing the justification for the move was feeble. And I'm surprised he gave it any credit at all. That's a diplomat giving it any credit of what's going on here. He noted that condoning the continuation of fighting while claiming to care about the lives and safety of the people in Gaza and the humanitarian needs there is self-contradictory. And so if we can get looking past nationalism, and we can look past logic and principles and just trying to be as good as you can while even in the worst cases, I don't see that he is speaking wrong there, or why I'm bringing it up. But the United States wants to continue this war crime that's going on, that these people, these Zionists, have actually no right to be doing. As I interpret the documents, as I've read some of the parts of them to you, and I hope at some point there's a meeting of the minds here on this point, and we get more and more people understanding that. Again, what we allow, we call it, we want to be moral beings. What we allow contrary to that is a reflection on us too. And so that's another terrifying view. How many people are agreeing that it's okay? Even, let's put it this way, even if Israel has a right, they don't have the right that they're exercising. So this is how bad. So again, going back, they called it feeble. Is that the strongest language a diplomat can use to call excusing what are the most deplorable war crimes and violations to international norms regarding preservation of civilization? He calls it feeble. I could not have believed what I was seeing. Is that it, folks? Is that how you call it? So objecting to its feebleness acknowledges by a matter of degree the propriety of continuing these heinous acts, condoning them, and is self-contradictory and hypocritic itself, not to diminish the U.S. hypocrisy in attempting to cover its war crimes. China apparently agrees with that extermination of the Palestinian people, and by extension, any other people, including my listener. And so I hope you understand, for me, I look through, yeah, I agree with what they're starting out, but he's used feeble. He's actually giving it some credit. And that's not acceptable either, not to my sense of right, my sense of justice. So, with this blatant disregard, Russia and the cause for all ill in the world asks why, but we're going to completely disregard the Palestinian people and what they're going through. Russia's asking why? Roman statute should be null and void. Rome statute should be null and void. Why is it so easy to accuse Russia but not Israel? Again, a fair question. This is where we start to look at principles. Everything should be fair and just. If we're going to do these things, either we do it all in and decimate everybody, or we are going to hold some standard. The reputation of the International Criminal Court could be completely destroyed in crimes against Palestine, or if the crimes against Palestine are not thoroughly investigated, said American attorney Stanley Cohen. But commenting on the question of why the ICC has yet to move towards indicating those responsible for crimes committed in the occupied Palestinian territories, Stanley Cohen replied, "They returned an indictment against Putin on the basis of ex parte claims, certainly probable cause within 4 days. In the case of Israel, you've had 9 years to find, investigate, and corroborate systemic violations of international law, the violation of the law of war, human rights violations, collective punishment, violations of humanitarian code, crimes against humanity, war crimes," he says. "Whether the ICC acts now will either be its saving grace or irreparably stain the reputation of the court forever." Now, I would only hope so, folks, but I'm not so sure, as they will continue to allow this. Why Russia? Why Putin? Under indictment, ICC, and Israel's not. It will tell you about everything. That gentleman actually worked on some of the agreements, so he's kind of up on the fact that there's been some real good breaches, and he's now aghast why there's this concerted effort against Russia but not Israel, doing far worse, it seems, as we read. Gaza's oldest mosque reduced to rubble. Hamas has condemned the alleged Israeli attack, calling it a barbaric crime. I mean, how many adjectives can you throw onto this? I don't even know what you call it. It's so bad. It's just the crime against crime, a crime of all times. And they urge the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, to protect historic buildings in Gaza. Israel has also reduced 9 publishing houses and libraries to rubble and destroyed a partially damaged and at least 21 cultural centers. In its latest report, the NGO Heritage for Peace found that 104 out of 195 architectural heritage sites in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. Fascinating what the Israelis or the Zionists are doing. The world in particular here, the world completely, as we witness again, in particular the Muslim world, is disgraced and continues to fail to act despite all the words to the contrary, despite all these nations saying that they're gonna protect the Palestinians and it's an atrocity. Even Hamas urging these feckless UNESCO to go look at that and stop it is too late, isn't it? They're destroyed. What is UNESCO going to do now? Their request, even by Hamas, is ridiculous. There's now nothing historic to protect. The mosque and other properties are destroyed by the rabid Zionist animal. Absolutely gone. This is absolutely a genocide, an ethnic cleansing. I don't care what other euphemism you want to call on it. I don't even know other words that would be stronger. Whatever the worst word is, it's what this is going on at the hands of the Zionists and supported wholly by the United States and the Uniparty. Absolutely destruction. This cultural destruction to remove the memory or the future discovery, if you look for like archaeology, of people being exterminated from existence is what we're talking about here. I don't know if, I hope people take this on. I don't know if people even think about it, but we're looking at if the United States government's going to support doing it somewhere else, they're doing it to you whenever it decides it wants to. Most every government ends up doing something like this in its history at some point also. And so, but we have exterminated from existence and, quote, even at the price of striking and harming our own forces, if you will. Again, bringing these ideas together as we go through the news and watch what they're talking. This sounds familiar here as well, as I've said in recent previous broadcasts. Those of you feeling Gaia is more important, then you need to stop breathing. Otherwise, consider yourself a hypocrite. As we read, we'll be reading here in a second, and be quiet and just trust the science. Or again, are you kidding me? Here's what your hypocrite high priest insisting on the sustainable Hannibal Protocol are saying about the green faithful. As we move now and transition, the hypocrisy to allow genocide of people globally, breathing contributes to global warming, the study says. It's not just the Israelis. It's just not the Americans paying for it. Methane and nitrous oxide found in human exhalations are worse for the environment than carbon dioxide, scientists say. And you remember the Irish government planned to cull cows, right? Over this very same problem. Now they're saying people do this. Now the green priests want their faithful dead, it appears. Trust the scientism. Stop breathing. As I've asked you before, if you believe in this stuff, stop breathing. You're the problem. You can solve the problem. Put some skin in the game. In this case, your breath. Hold it. And we see in the study, this is all beyond you, and this pollution swapping that they are after the vegans as well, when you read being targeted, like the grass-munching cows that they might be, the vegans. They're after older women, apparently beyond 30 years old, and I guess a woman beyond 30 years old is past their prime sustainability. Read the story. This is pretty interesting stuff. Well, who they're targeting. A detailed analysis of the test subjects' diets failed to yield an indication that meat eaters produced more of either gas. Let me just interject. Is that science, or is that just like looking for something? Is that looking for something to blame? Are you looking for a problem to solve? The problem to create with the salvation, oh, they eat meat, that's going to cause it. They're already starting this thing wrong. While all the test subjects exhaled nitrous oxide, only 31% exhaled methane. These individuals, referred to as methane producers in the paper, were more likely to be female and over 30 years of age, though the researchers were unable to determine why this is the case. And I read that, and that my mind, and I'm not really a movie guy, but a couple movies come to my mind periodically. Doesn't this sound like the 70s movie, the program Logan's Run? 30s and you're done? Well, they're targeting women after 30, and they don't know why. It's just something that they've had as a policy, like expecting to see meat eaters producing more. No, the vegans, not unlike cows, create the most of these greenhouse gases. But these green high priests are willing to kill people to advance Gaia, the protection and the world security of Gaia. And despite organic compounds being natural, as well as many inorganic minerals, we move through this now. I just tie interesting little tidbits together. Mysterious material obtained from asteroid Bennu, leaving scientists puzzled. Trust the science, folks. The scientists know everything. But they're puzzled here. I guess we'll puzzle this out as we go after and chase down the 30-year-old women, because they just exhale too much of the wrong type gas. Because, well, don't panic, green priests. They're organic. It doesn't matter anyway. In a significant development, NASA's OSIRIS-REx, like my dog Rex, maybe, maybe not. At any rate, mission has discovered an unusual and unidentified material in samples from the potentially hazardous asteroid Bennu. The finding comes alongside evidence that of organic molecules offering new insights into the origins of life on Earth. There's another one of those anticipatory sciences. Why is there life on Earth? Maybe life started on Earth. Who knows? But no, they're going to impose it on the world here. The OSIRIS-REx spacecraft, designed for a brief 6-second contact with Bennu, unexpectedly plunged deeper and longer into the asteroid's surface. The samples from the 3-billion-year-old asteroid that were collected in late 2020 and described as dark, carbon-rich, and organic molecule-laden resemble hummocky boulders with a unique rough texture. Quote, "We definitely have hydrated, organic, rich, remnants from the early solar system, which is exactly what we were hoping when we first conceived this mission almost 20 years ago, Loretta said, the lead scientist. Initial spectral analysis of the material has revealed an unexplained dominant blue spectral signature, hinting at possibly higher water content than expected. Additionally, the samples show high levels of magnesium, sodium, and phosphorus, which adds to the mystery. Look at all the hesitation and all that, all the anticipation. Not just looking to see what we're going to find. No, we're going to impose upon it what we should find. And then they're surprised. Sounds like science we can trust. But it sounds like a plot of grass, doesn't it? We looked at all these minerals. That was covered dirt that a cow ate from, doesn't it? Magnesium, sodium, phosphorus, humus-rich, organic-rich, carbon. Yeah, with this much carbon, water, organic molecules, or magnesium, sodium, and phosphorus-laden material. Maybe they need to be looking for the DNA from the alien buried on that asteroid, don't you think? Yeah, I do. What'd they dig up there, folks? I noticed they are telling us about, they aren't telling us about any gold they found, though. And so that got me thinking, we got a buried alien on that asteroid, all this organic material, all these minerals that would come in a body. If they don't find gold, likely it's because it was all stolen by the alien grave robbers and sold to the central banks of that extinct alien civilization that golder came from. And just like that's beginning to happen here as we read countries stockpiling gold. Grave robbers looking for the gold to sell to their central banks. Over 40 tons of precious metal were added to the state reserves in October, according to the World Gold Council. Central banks have continued their buying gold spree with reportedly net monthly purchases totaling 42 tons in October, the Gold Council said. The People's Bank of China, PBOC, remained the largest buyer, bullion buyer, reportedly purchasing 23 tons of gold in the 12th consecutive month additional to its reserve. In addition to its reserve, the report also noted that the central bank gold purchases have heavily outweighed sales of the metal so far. Even before October net buying, we noted that 2023 was likely to be another colossal year of central bank buying. Having started Q4 positively, this year's central bank demands look set to climb even higher. So what's in your wallet, folks? Gold or central bank fiat? And if fiat and the central bank digital coins, so-called, are so valuable, why are central banks buying gold? Maybe you should consider that and reconsider what they're doing and why they're buying gold and what they're handing you. And so we have an evidence here in this week, what's a country to do when it has no gold in its reserves to maintain its sovereignty? And I said, treat yourself as a, some of you call yourself the sovereign, but I don't know that you understand what that means, but consider that you're the sovereign and watch what sovereigns do, and watch what sovereigns do when they get it wrong and what happens to them, how they're not sovereign. This is this report here, but it also opens up the total being of the world and the financial system, the global financial system that already exists. Not distinct, not multipolar, but all one system, and how they're bringing parity to all that so they can work everybody into a debt servitude, just like A2030 says. So this week's notice is extremely educational from this story we're going to read, and I hope my listener agrees. I really hope you read some of these things and think about what you're reading and apply them to you. Now you're not a country, but if you're innate, you're organized. You have organs, and they're together in a body. That's your territory. That's you. That should operate as a sovereign as best you can. We can take leads on these organized bodies that are political bodies, not organic bodies, to make some comparisons. BRICS candidate likely to default. You catch these organizations. Now, BRICS is like a candidate is likely to default. Ethiopia has reportedly missed a deadline for paying $33 million in bond coupons. Can I say the magic number? $33 million bond coupon. Ethiopia will hold a call with its international bondholders later this week after the African nation failed to pay its $33 million bond coupon that was due on Monday, according to senior financial ministry official. the bond holders. Bondage holders. Read that into this as a debtor nation, not with any gold. Here last week, the finance minister said the country's efforts to renegotiate the bond terms before the deadline for the coupon payment had fallen through. The sides had reportedly disagreed over how long to extend the maturity and spread out repayments in its single $1 billion international bond maturing in December 2024. Ethiopia, which requested a debt overhaul under the G20 common framework in early 2021, had managed to service interest payments on its international bond until now. The all-important interest payments, now $1 trillion a year, approaching and closing in $1 trillion a year in the United States of America. I don't know why we have an interest payment on our own full-facing credit from the people, but there's a service payment. Like, to whom? And why so much if it's our money? At any rate, Ethiopia is not their money. They have a service payment. They couldn't make that. They're running into problems. A debtor, not a master bee here. Tagele Tolina said that the authorities' intention is to remain current with their obligations there. That's good. You want to maintain your obligations. But there it is, folks. It's the Western global financial system trap of perpetual debt, not able to even meet the service of interest payments, let alone their payments. At over $1 trillion a year, when will the United States be able to meet its service interest payments, be unable to meet those payments? And what's going to happen to us then is an interesting observation. But what service again? And to whom? When the debt is on the full faith and credit here, already extended by the American people, who's doing the servicing? Not the prostitution ring, it sounds like to me. Can my listener say unconscionable and odious? And I hope so, because the time may come, maybe soon, you'll probably need to. And that's going to take a little bit more knowledge. But let us toss this into the word salad. There is no distinction in a debtor system between creditors and debtors. The term credit and debt are synonymous. And this sounds familiar when you look at the servicing and the rights extended to everyone receiving their equal rights is the same. And you look under civil rights, as I've told you, look under federal law 42 U.S.C. 1981 to pay exactions of every kind and no other, and that they are in the form of such things as punishments, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and to make and enforce contracts. This is another equal right people miss before this statement, but that includes the making of or performance, modification and termination of contracts, and the enjoyment of all benefits, privileges, terms and conditions of the contractual relationship, to sue and to be parties, to give evidence, and to the full and equal benefit of the laws and proceedings for the security of persons and property as is enjoyed by white citizens. That's a statement out of Title 42, 1981. These international loans have security attached, don't they? These international loans have security. That's protected under American civil rights. So sure they do. So Ethiopia as a nation underneath this global financial system is subject. They're not a sovereign. The fiat system has made them not sovereign. And that system is now within the United States, jurisdiction of the United States, right? What the beginning opening sentence of Title 42, 1981 says. That the U.S. Treasury shall have the same right in every state and territory, just as Title 42, 1981 says in the beginning, as well as the principle, any federal money is subject to federal law, and not local or foreign law relative to international dealings, any national party creating, filing, or a person subject to the U.S. through which they deal with domestically has to be done, correct? You have to make, a nation had to make a legal entity in the United States that's also subject. So this so-called equal rights we talk about, civil rights you want to think about, this is international as well when there's contracts made by nations to the money, the banker's system, essentially. So that makes it real tidy when you start tying how this works. We can continue to read here. Ethiopia was severely hit by the aftermath of coronavirus pandemic and military conflict in the northern Tigray region, is currently struggling to pay its debts. The nation is also seeking a four-year loan from the International Monetary Fund. Ethiopia will become a member of BRICS on January 1st. So, firstly here, read this, how this is all tied together. This is a continuing reminder. The COVID swindle excuse is a self-inflicted wound which could have been avoided by any government or people adhering to their local, particularly their local communicable disease law. That no nation or people decided to insist upon or act within that law. And now they use it as an excuse to tear down, financially tear down nations, or use the excuse of the officials in those nations to be torn down. So think about the lawlessness of the world now, allowing that, the COVID swindle, allowing all that, what it's actually done. Now using it as excuse was their own self-inflicted wound. It could have all been stopped globally, everywhere. So no wonder we're in such a mess. No spirit of actual peace. And an insistence, only an insistence on this oppression of the world. And I just ask again, don't be of the world, folks. Work out what it is and how not to be standing there. So secondly on this, as I've said, there's no separation between BRICS and the global financial system, including the West. And in the words of they tell us, I read it, the U.S. Treasury, they all actually call it just Treasury now, is essential to that part. In other words, it's within the jurisdiction of the United States when they go to an IMF loan. So not only is it bad, they're going to try and get another loan. You never get out of this. A BRICS nation is seeking your four-year loan from the International Monetary Fund, this report says. So there it is, a BRICS member floating global financial system debt and asking for another IMF global financial system loan. There is no distinction. There's no polarity. Here. And I say it again, master, not a debtor be, folks. Don't be a debtor. Don't deal in global financial system fiat. What's in your wallet, folks? Ask yourself. Or does my listener know not to have one? How's that? How simple is this answer? And how are you doing on that front? And I'm going to say it's not so easy. I can talk like this, but it's not so easy. This is an open-air prison. It's no joke. Hard to keep contraband. And they consider all this asset stuff contraband. So, yeah, it's kind of like that. But the initial point being, there is no new order, merely a new ordered world, that no debtor be left behind, and it will be exploited. And this is occurring while a BRICS member representative is telling us that, and we see... The statement about gold that a BRICS representative should be telling us, I should say, that gold is the money of kings, silver is the money of gentlemen, barter is the money of peasants, but debt is the money of slaves, as stated by Norman France. That little statement should be picked up by Ethiopia. And they should really start looking themselves in the mirror about what they are tangling themselves up with. When you deal in the West's fiat, you're dealing as a slave. This is not a judgment. It's a fact of reality of dealing in debt. And this is where the United States government did the people no good. And we removed the ability to go from gold, finally, in 71. The people in the states now, where your power is, have to now get the law back and insist that gold and silver is a legal tender and start that back. Otherwise, I don't know how we extract ourselves as we watch the global competition turning up and nations looking to protect themselves and their people even from the competition. They want the competition out and they want to start doing it for themselves. And what will the West intend for my listener, but what here we're watching, UK seeks alternative to Visa MasterCard, and it's trapped. UK seeks an alternative to the Visa MasterCard, The British government has urged the banking sector to reduce reliance on U.S. payment networks. So it's not only Russia or China getting rid of this, offloading this privateering. No, the U.K. government itself needs to, but I think it's more we want the profit. The U.K. Should develop a digital alternative to challenge the dominance of U.S. credit cards, Visa and MasterCard, on a government commissioned review, said this week. The report urged the British payment sector to ramp up the use of open banking technology to bypass the traditional method of transferring money, which requires customers to enter sort codes and account numbers. Oh, even entering a number has become so difficult. Well, do you think that the digital token citizenship can run on biometrics and you don't need to do that? Yes, folks. How convenient. The UK wants their lion's share of what the MasterCard company is actually setting up globally to do. If you haven't picked that up, I've been talking about this the whole time. And so you choose our debt or your strict liability asset in this next report from Europe. Now, so look here at what my worthless son did, the money laundering criminal. So says Christine Lagarde in her report. Not quite that, but yes, it's what it means. Don't choose our debt, but don't use your important strict liability asset, gold or silver coin here, folks, or any other property that you might want to have. The ECB chief reveals family crypto losses. Now, don't be underestimating that we don't have an underminer here in the country, United States of America, also trying to get rid of crypto, making it a crime. And you'll see the representatives that are doing that, why it's a serious condition here and the government doesn't like competition. Christine Lagarde says her son has been investing in digital assets despite her openly expressed stance against cryptocurrencies. The ECB chief has often called cryptocurrencies highly risky, speculative, and worthless, and has on many occasions warned that they are not to be trusted, as they are often used by criminals for money laundering and or other illegal activities. She has for long also been calling the global regulation of the crypto market. Essentially, she's calling her son a criminal here, utilizing the crypto market. Told you shouldn't do that, she says. Lagarde is enthusiastic, however, about the central bank digital currencies. Choose our debt, but not your asset, folks, is what this is saying. A digital form of fiat money. So if you haven't heard it from anybody else, don't agree with me. Lagarde says these digital currencies are fiat money. That's not an asset. That's a debt. Creditor and debtor are the same in that system. Because all you can get is the debt from somebody, right? That's why toxic debt become monetized. So that it become money, you made it up. We made an agreement it would be money, and we all agreed to a big fraud back in 2009. The ECB has already announced its plans to launch a digital version of the euro, and it's currently in the preparation phase for this. And we will need 2 years before it decides whether to roll it out, the regulator last month said. So the preparation phase, or demise, folks, as we read, the West's 500-euro dominance ending, says Russian Representative Lavrov, the foreign minister. So choose their fiat. Don't look at golds for sure. Don't look at those cryptocurrencies, which I only have a problem with them because, well, they're a technology needing a technology. But if they were used as a transfer medium of value and they work, then I don't see a problem. It's a medium of value that works. I mean, it's no different than anything else, but I wouldn't say that I would have to agree with her. It's not only speculative in large part, and it's also a somewhat of a vulnerability. You lose your wallet, folks. What happens? What's in your wallet? You don't know because it's just digits. It's electrons. It's lost somewhere. West, 500-year dominance is ending, we're saying, we're being told. The formation of a multipolar world is the objective course of history, the Russian foreign minister said. The ministers expressed regret that certain circumstances prevented him from coming to the Qatari capital in person of the hearing hearing the discussion of the annual high-profile event that he attended. But I assume, he says, that you were discussing the multipolar world, which is emerging after 500 years of domination of what we call the collective West, Lavrov said. He presented this on a digital screen. Pretty cool, but this is, again, the digital world showing up here for us in all of its glory. This hegemony of the U.S. is the and its allies have been based on a diverse history, including ruthless exploitation of peoples and territories of other countries, he said. And I'd have to agree. And this is where the deal gets kind of sketchy, though. So you get to agree with him on this. He talks about a 500-year dominance. Wow, did the United States of America exist 500 years ago? So this really more sounds like his beef is with the United Kingdom. They have some bad blood going on, it sounds like, through this last year we've been hearing about it. So Americans, you might not be so independent here, given that the West is actually the United Kingdom, and we're not really talking about the United States. So you're not as dependent, independent as you might have been told. And if you read the documents, as I've been explaining to you, the Constitution, the documents prior to that maybe indicate that it's not. Remember, it was a commercial compact under a treaty of peace. The American people were not the victor in that. And so look very careful what a treaty of peace really is. Not about peace. It's about the cessation of war under an agreement. And it ended up being a commercial compact. And that's what all the congressional laws are about. Most all penal statutes are commercial violations. And then you have the IRS. That's all what it's all about. They'll come in after you. And so I say don't get in their fiat because that's what they deal in. And how you protect the asset is just protecting it against a criminal, a robber, a plunderer. So these organic documents acts we saw prior to the United States relate to all this. If you look closely what Russia's saying here, and suggesting that Russia knows that the 500-year history absorbs the United States. And we're not talking about the United States. But if you look at what Lavrov is saying, again, as we transform into the new ordered world, Russia is still transfixed on implementing globalism. And this is what I've been cautioning people. I may talk favorable on certain things, like I would say I agree with Beijing on some principles, but ultimately you look at what they're doing and they're agreeing to the atrocity, just using different words and a different tack to do so. This is what's happening through Russia at this point. As regards globalization, the methods, the tools, and the infrastructure here, this is the implementer of globalism. The capacity building that you hear, that term, that has been going on in America for a long time, actually, all these years. What have I said about the Modernization Acts? Here in this report, the fruition of one a bit over a decade after it has been enacted. I talked about all this then, and as I said about, I think it was 2011 or so, in this case, the Food Modernization Act, was promoted to end food insecurity, as I've explained previously, planned to bring on austerity or worse. So those laws back, I told you they would be implemented about 10 or so years later. Here we are. Many Americans are unable to afford food, even as unemployment remains low. But that's a statistical lie as well. At any rate, people are having a hard time of it. Here we're supposed to have a Modernization Act for food insecurity to be so that you'd be food secure. I told you it was all a lie. I told you it would set up to cause this. And here we are. Here's the notice for it. Despite many of the wealthiest countries in the world by net worth, according to 2022 data, the United States continues to struggle with hunger. A report from the United States Department of Agriculture found more than 44 million Americans facing hunger last year, including 1 in 5 children. Programs which provide food to these in need are crippling under demand, and prices at the grocery store that don't appear to be dropping anytime soon. So there's your evidence. The USDA is one of the premier partners in the Sustainable Goals issue, and I've been talking about this for years. It's all here. The Modernization Acts are the acts to transform your society from its organic roots to the future that they want, and that they want you dead, if you haven't been paying attention. And part of the issue here that it just struck me a little bit on how this works, they price everybody out, but I wanted my eyes fixed on the reference to what this is. They may be telling us what to expect in the future. I've already talked about this once, but here's another story referencing it. We have these correlation points going on, that there's a global shortages, not with just gunpowder, but the global shortage and high demand for chocolate have sent futures soaring. this is a scary thing here, folks. Prices for cocoa soared to their highest level in nearly half a century this week amid declining global supply, according to trading data. New York futures, and this is all speculation as well, but New York futures for the key chocolate-making ingredient rose about $4,200 per metric ton, the highest price for the commodity since, listen, folks, listen to the reference here, since September 1977, surpassing the 2011 peak that resulted from that year's cocoa export ban. By Côte d'Ivoire, prices have skyrocketed by roughly 75% so far this year. So I want to highlight here the referencing 1977. This is when, right after they cut out loose the gold standard, and right during that decade, it was the most extreme rises in prices and interest rates and everything. I've talked about it as well, watching interest rates that were going by the moment. They would be going up tenths of a percent, hundredths of a percent, and they walked right themselves. I'm watching them go right from 19%, 20%, 21%, 22%. That priced somebody right out of their house at that point. We're not even seeing close to that. Russia, on the other hand, is seeing 16.5%. That's what I found interesting as they raise their interest rates. But here, they're referencing 1977 as they're pointing us back. And so it's been higher than today, though, but priming the perception pump on this to familiarize this facade, we may be back to the 1970s future, or worse, might we, on this? We don't have the protections even of the 70s that's going on. But what they have in the story, what's the stated reason? We can read experts have attributed the spike in prices to poor crops in Côte d'Ivoire, I suppose, and Ghana, which supply 2/3 of the world's cocoa beans amid extreme weather and crop disease due to lower sterilization used by farmers. The start of the harvest in both regions has already fallen behind last season's pace, raising fears of a further tightening on the already undersupplied market. So that's the reason, folks, if you read, it's fear. Fear based on speculation. And what's the cause driving the fear? Climate change? Well, let us find out. It says industry analysts also note that a further price spikes are likely due to the threat to global supply posed by El Nino weather phenomenon, which is expected to dry out West Africa in the coming months. No, not climate change, because no, that's not about the weather, folks, but politics. It's El Nino that's causing all this, not some complete mindlessness affecting Germany, a tangible cause of a weather. El Nino, folks, who'd have thunk it? It's an actual weather phenomenon that the experts are saying caused this. I have it on some authority that may be ending here in spring. And I don't know what that's going to mean, but the El Nino was going to be short-lived here, it seems to me, if that's the case. Here we have reading, continuing to read, not climate change here, but just the weather is really causing them a bunch of trouble. It's cyclic here, folks. They could have predicted for it, but it's also being driven behind bad economies and demand. A lot of poor folks may not be able to afford it, but a lot of middle-class folks may not be able to afford it, but the rich, I guess, are drinking quite a bit of it. Supply shortages are also exacerbated by the increase in the global demand for cocoa beans, with the processing in Europe, Brazil, and Côte d'Ivoire are on the rise in recent months. So everybody wants their cut of this important thing here. So here we have it. Europe and Brazil are trying to get on the global frenzy of 75% increase in costs to the processors. Now, what's the increase by the time it gets to your cup, and when they add your carbon taxes? And then you see the life is getting very expensive indeed. I just thought interesting there. Keep priming us back to the 70s relative to the economic destruction that's coming. And I think people may want to remind themselves of what happened back then and start positioning yourselves. And if you weren't living then, look back and see what happened. Just position yourself better. And I don't know that, again, the hard metals, getting laws that make gold and silver coin legal tender, may not be a bad idea, really, as quickly as you can get them done. But here we have not global climate change at all. It's El Nino, an actual weather event that's slamming the world. That's pretty neat what's going on. It's a devastating weather phenomenon. How much moisture and air got pumped up by the if you will, the oceans turning over a bit and warming up just a bit, just a few degrees. Let's see, and what the UN Sustainable Goals fabricating the non-governmental taxing authority on these taxes for carbon taxes. We can read this stuff is going to be increasing more as the non-governmental taxing authorities are developed around the world, then through, you know, funneled through, everyone's going to take their cut. Andrei Sushtestov, will the UN survive? What could replace it? To me, this is almost like the Russians are playing a pivotal mind control issue going through and promoting the future they want. This is a pumping that thing. They're actually anticipating the UN might not survive, but if it doesn't, what will replace it is suggested. The global players may decide that the organization is too Western dominated and look for a new arrangement in the 21st century. The world has entered, that's going to be like 1.2 centigrade hotter too, you know, but anyway. Everyone will be dead and the oceans will be boiled, so I don't know what he's even talking about here. But the world, and we'll read the story, the world has entered into a period of qualitative change that will irreversibly alter the structure of the international system and usher in a new format for international affairs. Over the past 100 years, humanity has learned some important lessons from the situations like the one we're in now. One of these has been a common understanding of the value of life on the planet and the realization that humanity possesses catastrophic powers of destruction, the imprudent use of which could lead to the death of our species. Oh, we're talking about Israel and Gaza, right, and the Palestinians. The true multilateralism and inclusiveness of this organization is gradually being washed away by the West. The UN is less and less reflective of the civilizational diversity of contemporary international relations. It is in danger of becoming less effective than it was a few decades ago because of its significant Western bias. The current state of the UN is a reflection of today's international relations and crises. The situation will not return to normal until a new global balance of power becomes apparent to all. Once a new balance is found, the key states participating in the system will decide whether there is a need to reorganize the UN, reform it, or create another body to replace it in order to regulate relations between them and in a reasonable way. It sounds like the right to alter and abolish the Constitution, doesn't it? But here, what is the BRICS actually bringing into existence, folks? What is the idea here in Audrey floating to the public that might replace the UN? What the UN is irrelevant to and other than the publisher of the goals for everyone's shared responsibility in keeping that I shared with you years ago reading Agenda 22. No, not keeping the Republic. You abandoned that a long time ago. No, the coagulation of the global financial system blood clot requiring perpetual debt, the digital gulag, one that knows where every token is and is spent, where the science of AI objectively determines the sustainable fate of my listener, is what he's suggesting in this article, what Lavrov is talking about. Underneath what's going on. They're all promoting this issue. And I routinely warn and explain about this AI and its global technocratic utility bringing everyone into A2030, the sustainable austerity, the prosperity to share your responsibility to the green religion to save Gaia is what we're talking about here as I've read the documents and what they've been implementing, what everyone calls WEF now, WEF. They're just a little player. Everybody's imposing the agenda, even the nations at this point. Even if they want to, you want to share your responsibilities to that green religion to save Gaia, even if you need to stop breathing, folks, right? As we've heard, your breath is now in danger. And you 30-year-old women, you're the ones the main cause all of a sudden. EU strikes world's first sweeping AI regulation deal. AI is going to be the objective basis in all this on the technocratic bureaucracy and non-governmental organizations that are keep tab of everything. And if you don't think that a bank is a non-governmental organization and they've got all the gold and they're the sovereign, relook at the news today that I've been talking about it. The AI industry has been locked in a heated arms race over the past few years with billions poured into the field. However, there have been concerns voiced by governments and the public over everything from economic impact, such as AI taking over jobs, to fears of misinformation and privacy violations. Okay, so that's the lead. But what's the actual point regarding all these fear-based hand-wringing purportedly to protect my listener? Here's the actual implementation when we read, the European Union prided itself as being the first to hammer out a sweeping deal of comprehensive regulation of artificial intelligence on Friday. The AI Act has encouraging innovation, harnessing potential benefits of the rapidly advancing technology while mitigating possible risks. EU lawmakers spent a lot of time seeking, quote, the right balance between making the most of AI potential and to support law enforcement while protecting our citizens' fundamental rights. Now, we talked in the very first article, your fundamental rights, you thought, are actually subject to question and whatever the government wants to impose, that you have to say don't exist as that standard. So we're back to that. Yeah, that too. He said this on X, and he added that we do not want any mass surveillance in Europe. The reason why it took so long was the need for the Careful Balancing Act while trying to address safety and privacy concerns that were fears of overregulation. So, here we have, there is a fear in the EU of overregulating government law enforcement while encouraging AI innovation in a way that does not look like surveillance. That is what they're talking about in the phrase mitigating possible risks to the governments being found out for the criminal organization that it is. So, now I get that now, don't I? Yep, I think I do. I hope you do too. Again, these are all, they want to talk at doublespeak. No, they're telling us exactly what their meanings are different than what we might anticipate. Again, if you look at the United States as a place where you have rights and not an open-air prison, you're going to have the wrong perspective, absolutely have the wrong actions after that. So when you read the list in this article, as you get, I hope you get it and read it, you'll see, look for the exceptions and the classes of things not protected to see what it can be used to do by law enforcement or Greta when she gets her bureaucratic enforcement position, and what of the objective perfection of AI disseminated news. Moving on, you're going to be flooded with all what you're supposed to be doing. So that doesn't go away. This censorship nonsense that we're hearing about, these publications that are going to be given approval, are serious threat. We talked about them in the sense of censorship, but these are going to be the publications of your expectations of what you need to share responsibility for. But we don't have to wait to find out because we already know it. It's already in practice. Microsoft AI inserted a distasteful poll in the news report about a woman's health death and the health and death. The Guardian says the insights from AI poll showed up in the next story about a young woman's death syndicated by MSN, asking readers to vote on how they thought she died more than 3 years after Microsoft gutted its news division and replaced their work with AI and algorithmic automation. The content generated by its systems continues to contain grave errors that human involvement could or should have stopped. This is my main argument to this, my main position, exactly what it is. It's error-prone, A-R-O-prone, A-I-R-R-O-R, and that's what's going on. Just to continue to say and show AI needs proper human involvement to filter the erroneous products of AI, the information gave to you, the information that Greta will be using to determine your tokenization and what you get to do and share that day, even maybe not breathe. How's that? AI is going to have all that going because somehow society is going to give over to it if it does. So to go along with those rights you are gave all here, this is to say that one's token citizenship activities in the digital gulag will be decided by gravely erroneous AI, and you won't be able to pull its plug to your irreparable harm in your life, your rights to be uninfringed life, to be left alone is gone, your liberty, the pursuit of happiness or property, remember you won't have any, and you'll like it. This is going to be your choice, though, as I keep telling you, as they bring this thing along, they're pushing it, and people are going to have the ultimate choice to do without, and that's not going to be an easy decision. Just like it's not so easy, apparently, to go ahead and try to use gold and silver coin or try to get a law that says it's a legal tender so you can use it without a question. No, no one wants to go and work, do that work. No, they're going to let this convenience hit them, and the world around you will change, and the Borg will absorb you if you don't figure this out real quick. And how to counter it, you have to make yourself an alternative path for you. And then hopefully those will mutually line up to with others, and then you can help yourself. But these Microsoft, the computer company, gutted its newsroom, if you will, for AI, and it becomes the expert of the news and what they want you to know. And they're running their own AI on top of it. So expanding the information on the reach of the gravely erroneous AI curated and biased information, as well as the bias in the people's exposing the bias. In this next article, you'll see how Microsoft is making a mess of the news after replacing staff with AI. Just add that to any company that replaces anything with AI that doesn't have this filter after it, which this should be interesting at least to see how this is working. They're telling us how it's not going to work. If you're interested in glimpsing slightly the picture of this insidious AI nature that the governments are bringing, these are all corporations too, people too, right? There's corporations. And we have to protect ourselves against this. This next story can give you that, not to diminish our power of discernment, though, which we have to hold, how Microsoft is making a mess. The false claims that the President Joe Biden fell asleep during a moment of silence for victims of the Maui fire, and a conspiracy theory that the latest surge in COVID-19 cases is being orchestrated by a Democratic Party ahead of the election, an obituary of the late NBA player that described him as useless, is all that this Microsoft AI was generating. Now, whether or not it was true or not is not the point. This is going to be the authority in the future where you get what you're expected to do, your notice on your performance, your behavior. I haven't used that word in a long time. That is in the news already on how terrible that will be, but people seem to want to look past it. And then we get this. There's that in Microsoft, and we can look at Google. Remember, these are powers now in the digital world, in the so-called virtual space. Google's AI concluded that the U.S. moon photos were fake, but thought that the Chinese photos were fine, and Putin laughed and called them funny. And so this starts to bring up, well, was that AI, Google's AI, correct or erroneous? Very interesting story here. According to the Russian news agency Sputnik, at the Artificial Intelligence World Tour in Moscow, there was a very interesting episode. The head of the data research department at Sberbank, Nikolai Gerasimhin, introduced Russian President Vladimir Putin to the methods of identifying fake photos and videos. During the event, Gerasimhin, I guess I can call him, talked about his experience working with Google's artificial intelligence and compared photos of the Chinese and the American missions to the moon. After the results of the analysis, Sberbank President German Greff told Putin, "Google's neural network almost considers all the objects on the American photo to be fake. At the same time, this photo taken by the Chinese lunar rover does not raise any special questions." Putin's expression was particularly interesting, and he first touched the wing of his nose, then pointed to an American photo and said, "So it thinks it's fake?" "Yes, that's right," said Greff. "This is the result of Google's neural network, not our analysis, so there is no bias, which is surprising, but it is true." Gerasimhin added, "Google's neural network analyzed a lot of data, including light and dark contrast, and concluded that the photo was composited, for those of us not syllabically challenged. When Putin heard this, he shook his head and then said playfully, "Very interesting." And so we have another article. Google AI says American lunar lander is fake, and this is a link to the Twitter vid, so you can see it yourself. You can see this is actually going on. It looks pretty straight up. Looks pretty honest about the question becomes, was AI wrong there? Well, I don't know. In imagery, in the comparison of things, AI does really good. And so this is a very interesting little story where we have Microsoft throwing out just about anything and then insulting people. This one may insult the Americans. I don't know. Maybe insult NASA. Very interesting what AI can do as far as causing trouble real quick on things that we held too tightly as beliefs that may not be so. But not all is evil. Even Google, even the company here dropping the motto, don't be evil. One of the things AI does well is fact sifting through data. And as I said, again, it's not all one-sided. Cryptocurrency, in its right place. The AI, as a tool, absolutely has its powers. And I think we may have seen one here, as I've talked about material science. It's been a thing with me for a long, long time. I realized early on, especially in the R&D days, that material science was key. If we didn't have the right materials to do the job, you can only go so far. Certain things can only be done within the context of the material you use. But here we have Google's DeepMind's new AI tool helped to create more than 700 new materials. Newly discovered materials can be used to make better solar cells, batteries, computer chips, and more. Well, look at all the technocratic things going on there. But anyway, Google DeepMind hopes to change that with a new tool that uses deep learning to dramatically speed up the process of discovering new materials called Graphical Networks for Material Exploration, GNOME, GNOME. The technology has already been used to predict structures for 2.2 million new materials, of which more than 700 have gone on to be created in the lab and are now being tested. It is described in a public paper published in Nature Today. Once new materials have been identified, it is equally important to synthesize them and prove their usefulness. Berkeley Lab's new autonomous laboratory named A-Lab, the lab is capable of making its own decisions about how to make a proposed material and creates up to 5 initial formulations. Researchers at Berkeley Lab said A-Lab was able to perform 355 experiments over 17 days and successfully synthesize 41 out of 51 proposed compounds. And this works out to 2 successful synthesis a day. In a typical human-led lab, it takes much longer to make materials. And quote, if you're unlucky, it can take months or even years, said Pearson at a press briefing. Most students give up after a few weeks, she said, but the A lab doesn't mind failing. It keeps trying and trying. I guess the Energizer Bunny. But very cool. As I have previously said, AI is a tool and it could be very good in things like material science. I actually specifically pointed this out. And this is one of those examples here. And very, very interesting. These advanced materials that can now drive new inventions. And I say this with an experience in R&D. We would do stuff, an engineer would design stuff, I'd make the thing that he'd said, and we would look at the material, okay, well, we can't do it now. It's just not fast enough. It's just not the right material. It doesn't work. The engineering won't work. We have to then send it out to figure out or design the material you need. So this is going to be very cool in this regard. But notice the caveat that, again, as I say over and over, it's A-I-R-O-O-R prone, error prone. It needs people verifying and confirming. Even after the special robot lab is tasked with making valid new materials and succeeds, AI here is a very cool tool, but it still needs a human intervention to verify that it's correct. So that will never stop. But that will never, you know, we can make all these materials, but that will never stop Google from doing evil with those materials that make gathering big data and privacy intrusion easier, as you heard all the electronic equipment they can do with this. Remember those biological instruments they can come up with, or any other Covey swindle is here easier because the magic to powerful deception here was masterful. They can do the very same thing. They did it. They did all this in the Covey swindle with their patented novel materials, and people bought it. And I tried to identify that the best I could. Again, it was a couple of people that actually knew of this. They were at the time they did that. And so we got proof of all that really quickly. And so this Google, who took away the motto, don't be evil, can do a good thing, but it doesn't mean that with that information, they'll continue to do a bad thing. So how, again, moving on quickly here, So how many short years ago have I been talking and mentioning these stem cells and created organoids on the promise of organic AI? So we're tying in the technocratic future. We're tying in the machines. We're talking tying now our organisms. We're talking about nature. And we're talking about, they've had a breakthrough, a very cool thing, but very one weird, it is also living brain tissue powers breakthrough cyber neural network. Okay. The development of the brain where chip is revolutionary, blending the miniaturization brain analog with the electronic elements. It significantly enhances speech recognition, the mathematical calculations, but also raises ethical considerations and challenges related to energy efficiency. Researchers at the Indiana University have pioneered a new kind of neural network using organoids, brain-like structures developed from stem cells, making a significant advance in the field. The study published in the Nature Electronics Journal explained that though it's significantly different from the human brain, these brain-like structures are small-scale tissue-based models. As they are incapable of thoughts, emotions, or consciousness, they are instrumental in a brain research circumventing the ethical challenges linked to experimenting on humans. Think about that, what they just said there, because they're going to bring up a later hesitation, but here we have, these things don't have thoughts, emotions, and consciousness. The thing that makes people, people. And I'm not so sure that's going to be so easily, Vince, adjustable or imposed upon these stem cells. Anyway, moving on, the technology of the new invention called BrainWare brings together a miniaturization of brain analog with a complex, closely packed multi-electrode array. This chip enables the transmission of electrical impulses and the detection of electrical activities within nerve tissue. BrainWare was tested in two applications, speech recognition and solving nonlinear equations. It showed a marked improvement in recognizing Japanese phrases, increasing its accuracy by 51% and 78% in more than 24 hours. And I have the Japanese phrases caught my mind in the R&D lab that I was in. There was a Japanese engineers that were making a chip, and this is back in the day. This was not even known to be able to be done. They had made a chip that synthesized speech. It was realistic speech. You had not like you hear today. And we had a Japanese production supervisor that was taken. She was native to Japan, working in the production side, brought over, and was said to talk to a technician that was sitting behind the bench. And she was actually talking to this chip. And this chip sounded so real, she thought she was talking to the technician. And the engineers brought her around to see this chip she was talking to, not people. And they had a great laugh about it. And they had successfully convinced someone else that this hardwired chip, not a software, could actually sound like people. And it worked. So this is way back in the day. And I'm just wondering how much of this technology for speaking Japanese in a way that's credible that might be incorporated. Maybe it's not. The point is, hardwiring things into place and a neural network is a really big jump here, and I wanted to stress that there's a lot more to read. I don't have the time. I hope something I point out to you here is showing us the future that they want, what they're going, what they want to do with it, whether we're not in control, whether we're in control, whether we want to avoid it completely, and how we might want to do that. And I'll hope you think about some of this and move in the right direction, take the right action. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, or Nature Willing.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.